coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio. Located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report for today, Tuesday, February 21st, 2023. I'm so glad to have with me Mr. Stan Dale, Professor Stan Dale, the real Indiana Jones. I'm telling you, he's a real deal in terms of his exploits. Make sure, folks, if you haven't done so already, there's so much insight, political and otherwise, insight in his book, Cosmic Conspiracy. Now, I'm going to tell you something, okay? He wrote this back and began writing it in 76, I think his final updated revision, if you will, was in around 2010. But the information in this book, even from 76, which gives the New World Order quadrants and sections, I mean, I'm telling you what, it is magnificent in terms of, it's eloquent in terms of how it was written and the information that is given to us that applies today and we see playing out today. So make sure you get your copy of Cosmic Conspiracy as well. Did you hear this? Russia, Star Treaty, no thank you, not anymore. You know what? Biden and his handlers changed the rules of the game. So nuclear war back on the table. We are facing a nuclear exchange. Now, having said that, Dare to Prepare. If you haven't done so already, get your copy of Dare to Prepare, Holly Deo's magnum opus of preparations, of preps. It's like an encyclopedia. I'm telling you, it's fabulous. So please do that. Do your family and yourself a favor, Dare to Prepare. If you don't need one, or you don't think you need one, that is until you get it and start looking at it and saying, oh boy, I didn't know that. Then give it to a family member, because war is here. It is here. We are right now in World War III. Those people in history study what happened right before World War II with the stock market, with trade and such. Hey, it was going gangbusters. Until, you know, World War II happened. But we're seeing this play out all over again. All right. With me is Stan Dale from Stan Dale. Oh, yes. Oh, thank you, Eric Tech. EMPShield.com. Speaking of nuclear war, what would nuclear war be without an EMP? Huh? I'm asking you. Or even the sun, from the sun, if you think, hey, no nukes are going to be exchanged. EMPShield.com, promo code Hagman. If you haven't done so already, this is perhaps one of the most important investments you can make for your home, for your car, for your boat, for your generator, for your whatever it might be. Protect your equipment by EMPShield.com. By the way, you know what? You don't want your house to catch fire, do you? Because it can, it might, depending on the strength of and position, if you will, of the EMP. EMPShield.com, promo code Hagman for $50 off. Look, folks, I would not live in a home without it, drive a car without it, be on a boat without it, or you know what I mean, right? Don't leave home without it, or don't stay home without it. EMPShield.com. Promo code Hagman with me again, Stan Dale, the real Indiana Jones. Here he is in all of his glory. I appreciate his time, his effort, his flexibility, his understanding, his patience, and, of course, his knowledge. Here he is.
Good to see you back again, and good to be here again.
Good to have you. Good to be seen.
It is true. Before we start today, I just wanted to mention on my show images page at the top there with slide 55, Dr. Michael Heiser passed away from pancreatic cancer yesterday, and just wanted to, you know, let people know a great Hebrew scholar has now passed on.
You know, he's been on our show, and we've lost so many good ones. We've lost so many. You know what, Stan? We're all getting older.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not you and Holly, okay? but I know I am. I can feel it every day. And Dr. Heiser was a great, great scholar. And boy, I'll tell you what, he will be missed.
Yeah, we discussed the location of Atlantis, he and I, offline, and although we disagreed on the location, we did discuss the data, and I studied his Nag Hammadi analyses. So he was really quite a valuable resource for the Christian community.
You know, that's the thing today. Even though we disagreed on X, Y, or Z, we had discussions, and we showed evidence, we showed findings, and that's the way it should be. And yeah. I give you a lot of credit, give him a lot of credit for bringing the discussion to the table and going through it. So that's what we lack today in the scientific community. It's it's who gets the biggest buck is the people with those with the mouthpiece. So okay. All right, I'm going to turn this hour over to you. I just have a brief break in about 30 minutes, just a 90-second break. But other than that,
Well, quickly, I'll just comment on your talking about our books. Holly's book we have in stock, the Dare to Prepare book, we have plenty of those. But there's been such a run on the cosmic conspiracy that we're out of stock until about 3 to 4 weeks. We've ordered a reprint, and
you scallywag.
Why?
Well, for not having it in stock. Doggone it.
Well, I did have it in stock, but I did a couple of shows before we did caught up to you this week, and they went off the shelf like gangbusters.
I know. And that really underscores the importance of what's in that book, I believe. The fact that it's going so well today. And no, congratulations, really. I was kidding around, but congratulations on that, because the people really need to understand. By the way, anyone who wants it, I've got a copy of your book. Let's see, what's an appropriate amount? $1,000? $2,000 for the copy? If you don't know what to do.
Yeah, good luck. Eric, you can, if you're on our show images page, you can click on image 18, slide 18, which tells about the cosmic conspiracy there. And right to the left of 17 tells about the Dare to Prepare and the things it has in it, like how to prepare for nuclear war, to stay in place in your home. It's a very important thing. It has a document from 1950s from FEMA on how to prepare your home for nuclear war. And it's more than just duck and cover. It's quite, detailed. Anyway, 17 and 18, Eric, if you want to put that into the dialogue there.
Here we go. Okay.
Speaking of, yeah, that's it. Now, slide 56, while we're on this, is about, it's a video made by one of our listeners, Stan Moore, and he's holding a picture of the EMP shield for his vehicle, and it's, then he goes through the video showing how he put it in, so you can know how to put it in. So just a thought if you want to look at it. Now, the elephant in the room, I think, this week, other than Biden, well, I guess President Biden, I hate to say that, but anyway, I guess him being overseas. Other than that, the earthquakes in Turkey have really caught my attention. If you look at slide, which one will we do? Slide 52, Eric. Slide 52 is a map from my lecture on the Garden of Eden and where the four great rivers originated. But the reason for this is, if you see that thing called Firat right there, the Nile path, whatever, we weren't sure whether the Euphrates or Firat went down the Red Sea or went down the Nile path. But however it did, it went up the coast like Turkey and part of Syria. You can see the arrow up at the top. And it went up into Turkey. Now, there were some earthquakes at the time I made this map to show you. Way up at the top, where that little red dot is, around there are some earthquakes at that time. Now, this is what it was pre-flood, where it came from. After the flood, where that red dot is, and maybe down to the yellow arrow to the lower left of it, that is what was left of the Euphrates. And the Bible in Hebrew talks about the Euphrates in later days as Ephrat, Ephrat. It repeats it twice. And that's an old way of pluralizing or saying pieces of, you know, the Ephrat and the Ephrat. And this means that it was broken. So it recognizes in the Hebrew that it was broken from the original time before the flood. Now, Eric, if you'll go back on the thing and click on slide 53. Now, 53 is highlighting the path that's left today, should the water have flown from the coast in. Now, today everybody thinks that the Euphrates started somewhere up near, well, where the end of this red dot is, or the red line is, sorry, on the right side of that red line. But in the times of the Romans and the Greeks, they said that the Euphrates started with the Murat River, the Murat River. And, you know, I thought about this and I thought, well, what is right? In Revelation 9:14, the sixth angel blows his trumpet and four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates are released to go do their mischief. In Revelation 16, it says the sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates and its water was dried up to prepare the way for the kings from the east. Now, why is that important? Let me just see if I've got that up here. Yeah, okay. There's several news articles. I'm just going to check slide 54, Eric, if that's the news article. No, that's a good video to watch. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But what I wanted to emphasize was that in February 20th this year, you know, like just a few days ago, yesterday, They publish articles in the archaeologist.org website saying that the Euphrates has dried up, and it's due to a number of things: drought, misusage, countries having war about how much water they let flow down the Euphrates, and it's beginning to look like a fulfilling a biblical prophecy about the Euphrates drying up. But now for it to dry up, you know, where does it start? You know, there are two or three places that I found that it could start. And so I direct you to slide 57, Eric. This is a large map I've prepared showing the earthquakes of the Temblors, they call them in the earthquake community, the Temblors, for the last 30 days in Turkey. Now, all of these are in Turkey. I didn't know where you realize that Turkey had a leg going down to the lower left like that. But there are over 300 earthquakes that have occurred in the last 30 days here. Now, if you look at this map, you can zoom in. The red pins show where the Murat River starts over on the right, or where it is from the city of Murat. But I think it started up higher, just underneath the T in Turkey up there in the title. I think that's basically where the Euphrat, but also the Euphrates may have started. But I show these red pins to show different paths of the water coming from up there in Turkey, down around this area to where it is today. And let's see here. The Euphrates changes name, by the way, as it goes through different countries. It's the Adıyaman River and the San Liurfa River, and the Malatya River. So anyway, where is the start of this is what I wondered. And the reason I wondered is all these earthquakes that are happening there are affecting the flow of water from the mountains there in Turkey. And this is a very dynamic area. You know, when the earth changes occurred after during the flood, there were a lot of areas pushed and shoved to form mountain ranges, like you see on the left side there, where it shows a cluster there of white ones and little yellow ones at 38.05 north and 37.25 east. That was the first group of earthquakes, but then it moved to the right, which to the east, which does concern me, because I think that with these earthquakes, it's going to totally dry up the Euphrates. Even those three countries that are withholding a fair amount of water downstream, they're not going to have any water because the Euphrates is going to dry up. And this is just so, you know, in line with biblical prophecy in the book of Revelation. Just have a look at that and see. I mean, the headwaters there at the lower left, there's a red pin called Euphrates pre-flood headwaters. And that's where it went up inside that yellow borderline for Turkey on that leg there where the earthquakes are. That's where it used to come up and over and dump into the Persian Gulf eventually.
What is the significance? Let me ask this, okay? Because the timing, location of that earthquake that you had referenced in the same context of what you're talking about here, I just kind of want to go back to that.
Right.
Was that, could that not be? Because, you know, look, I don't believe in coincidences. I understand conspiracies. I understand our capabilities. Could that have been man-made? Using weapons such as a combination, I don't know, of HAARP and some other weaponry. But could that have been man-made? And if so, what would be the motive behind it? Because what are the consequences of it now? I'm just, you don't even have to answer that, except maybe, yeah, it could have been. We have that capability.
It would be difficult, Doug, to hit it with a bomb without leaving a trace of a nuclear device. For HAARP and for orbital systems. Possibly they could find an area that's about to have an earthquake and edge it along with sonic waves of some sort. But it is so widespread. If you look at that map, they're all over that area of Turkey and down the lake, down to the toward the Levant and Syria and Lebanon.
Did you publish that? That's your map, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because I have not seen that elsewhere, and I didn't realize the area, the diversity of the dots, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you. All right, I got you.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm not privy to, our secret weapons, or what we have in the arsenal any longer. I have to depend on the same service as you do. So I don't know. I won't disallow it, but I'm just saying that it's probably not, unless it was the key earthquake zone.
And frankly, that's good enough for me. Okay. Because to me, you're the expert on this, and you know what to look for, and the absence thereof suggests perhaps more of a natural inclination. So thank you for that. Okay.
Okay. Now go to slide 54, I think it is. Let me see here. 54. Yeah, Eric, look at the picture. I've got six snaps from an article that goes with that, which is in the tech. If you click on that, it goes to video. But if you look at that, you'll see, you'll have to bring it in like that. That's right. Okay, you'll see that this was an olive grove in Turkey. And it is in Antakya, on the Turkey-Syria border there. And you can see how suddenly, in the top left picture, you can see the dots of the olive grove from the air. Yeah. And then as you progress around, you will see different views of this whole valley or gorge that just formed from the earthquake. And you can see in about the second row right-hand part of it, you can see how deep these things are. Wow. And it just overnight just destroyed most of this olive grove. And that's not, that's probably kind of the least of the damage is done and the people that were killed. But I think we're going to see more earthquakes in that region. And obviously at some point in time down in Israel as well. Earthquakes. Let's talk about New Zealand earthquakes. I want to outline some things for people to watch. It hasn't started yet, but look at slide 49, Eric, which lets us see the red and the blue lines, which are fault lines that lead down to the middle of that graph, which is Lake Taupo. Now, the red lines on the left here and the blue lines with it, they go down right through Lake Taupo and down south of that, through Ruapehu volcano and around it. Why is this important? It's like a long zipper, you know, like in your blue jeans or something. You know, it's a zipper, and the release to that zipper, according to the GNS, Geological and Nuclear Services, which is their USGS, the release is when you watch White Island up there in the yellow at the top of the white arrow. If that glows goes really hard, the fault line that you see on the coastline there, that red at the tip of the white arrow where the red starts, you'll see that it will start to cause earthquakes all the way down where the red lines are on the left there, going down through Lake Taupo. Now, one of the things that I saw in my dream vision was that when Taupo erupted, what happened first was the waters got hot, you know, and the water level dropped, and then it rose up. And as it is now, they're having a lot of what they call smokers or hot steamers down the bottom of Lake Taupo, sitting on top of the magma pile underneath Lake Taupo. So if there's a rupture big enough there from an earthquake to let the water drain down into that hot magma pool, it will be a steam-driven, you know, volcanic eruption supreme, which, you know, I saw in my dream vision, and so did several other Christian folks that live there, plus the Maori, you know, kahuna wise woman. She said they expected it to happen too and gave us a clue about it. Well, this is why that I'm pretty convinced that Lake Taupo is going to go. And from the earthquakes that we've had in that area, let's look at slide 51. You can see that it's going to be a concern. There are fault lines all through Lake Taupo, which is just kind of above that word TBC. And there are about 300 or 400 earthquakes that have occurred there in the last 6 weeks. So that area is starting to warm up. And if you look at slide 50, that shows you the depths of the earthquakes. And so what you see is the green is 35 kilometers deep. That's shallow earthquakes over on that side. And that goes over to the edge of Lake Taupo, where that word zone is, Taupo volcanic zone. And then in the yellow, it's starting to be deeper. So deeper to shallow 35 kilometer earthquakes in that area is not a good thing to see, because it means that the deep areas underneath Lake Taupo, where the magma pool is, that they may be accessed by a fracture that starts there and goes up to the water level there in Lake Taupo. So anyway, let's have a look at that. It's keep looking at it.
You know, every time you bring this up, I really believe that. I believe the evidence is gaining steam. That's not the right phrase to use, but I think things are happening to show that what you anticipate happening, it will happen. And folks, this message is brought to you by the New Zealand Chamber of Commerce, all 22,000 subsets of the chamber. Okay.
Yeah, right.
30 chambers, by the way. 22,000 members. Okay.
Okay. Are we at commercial time yet?
Well, you know what? Let's do it right now, because I want to thank our supporters and those people, both you folks. This platform would not be made available without the fine friends out there that really support us financially. We could not do this without you. And you know what? I want to thank our corporate sponsors too, the couple that we have who've stuck with us. And I just happen to use the sponsor Honey, H-O-N-E-Y. I happen to use this, my wife, my stepson, everyone I know uses Honey, and they are saving money through this app, through Honey. Folks, today's episode is sponsored by Honey. It's the easy way to save when shopping on your iPhone or computer. They have it for your computer now. Thank you very much. And you know, look, I like to save money. We are on a budget constantly. We're watching what we spend, and we're taking care of how we spend our money. And I feel a lot smarter rather than lucky when I apply, you know, when I save money, that is. So a couple of things I want to say about this. I was surprised at how much money that we saved using honey. Tax time. It's tax time for us now as a corporation. You know, the corporate taxes are due on March 15th, and getting the paperwork together for that and being accurate is something else. And having looked at how much money we've saved, well, I'm going to tell you, this is well worth it. And I feel a lot smarter when I report to our small board here about how much money we've saved during the course of a year. Thanks to honey, manually searching for coupon codes. Well, that's a thing of the past. No mo do you need to do that. Honey is a free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. And how it works is really simple. Because if I can do it, this is Eric the Tech talking. If I can do it, anyone can do it. Yeah, imagine you're shopping online for one of your favorite sites. When you check out, the honey button appears, and all you have to do is click apply coupons. Just wait a few seconds, bada bing, bada bang. And if honey finds a working coupon, you'll watch the prices drop. And again, I've used this. We've saved on food purchases, food delivery services. That's right, for our staff meetings. We do have those. We saved $77, and it was a really unique amount. It was like $77.77 on a piece of studio equipment here in January that we needed to keep running. And I was surprised by the percentage. That was like a high percent of savings. I think it was close to like 12% that we saved. So, look. You know, when you're looking at paying several hundred dollars and you're able to save 12%, that's a lot of money. It really is. And it's exciting to know that you can have this too. Honey just doesn't work on desktops. It works on your iPhone as well. Just activate it on Safari on your phone and save on the go. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this show. Get PayPal Honey for free at joinhoney.com/Hagman. That's joinhoney.com/Hagman. H-A-G-M-A-N-N. And as I like to say, you'll thank me later. You really will. Stan Deo is my guest. Well, you know what? He's an integral part of this program. He's not a guest anymore. He's surpassed that status about 5 years ago, 10 years ago. I don't know. 100 years ago. The guy is a legend. The man, the myth, the legend, Stan Deo. Back to you, sir.
I was looking at your commercial there for that honey device. I suppose you could summarize it and say, that's a sweet deal.
Oh, you're killing me.
But you know what?
You're right. And the neat thing about that, I just want to say this. The neat thing about that is it's so simple to use, and it does, it shows you how much you save, and it's you know, it's easy to use. joinhoney.com/Hagman. So, okay. And while I'm at it too, you know, your EMP shields, I've been hearing more and more people saying, you know, I got your EMP shields. I thought it was difficult to install. It's not. And that video you referenced initially makes it very, very easy for anyone, even me. Although Eric says, don't touch wires. Don't stay away from electricity. And, you'll be fine. But no, if I can do it, anyone can do it. So there you have it. All right. Well, EMPShield.com. Right. By the way, EMPShield.com, promo code Hagman. And get it today because you don't know about tomorrow. Go ahead, sir.
All right. Slide 46, Eric. We're going to talk EMP Shield, it looked like. Yesterday, my partner Tim Carty, you'll see him in the picture there with the governor of Kansas, Laura Kelly. We're going to be opening up a computer chip manufacturing facility there in Coffee County. It's one of several factories that we now have. And it's going to be about a $1.9 billion with a B investment. So we got help from various funds and stuff to help us do all that money.
Did you get that out of your petty cash drawer? That's a lot of money, and that's a heck of a commitment. But thank you for doing that. That's what this country needs. Thank you.
Well, think about it. You know, the computer chips have all been made over in China, and of course, we're going to be at war with them and Russia, etc. if we're not already technically, but my partner Tim sent me this, you know, he was with the governor. The facility will give at least 1,200 people jobs, as it says in the article. And it's part of several things that we're doing with state and federal governments and three-letter agencies to try to protect American grid system against EMP pulses from nuclear bombs, from directed pulses from floater balloons, if such exist, but also and particularly from the sun, which is 1,000 times worse than the EMP from a bomb. It lasts for hours, whereas an EMP pulse is less, you know, a millionth of a second or less. I am going to be probably releasing some of my shares to my listeners and stuff here shortly. I've just got to check with the legal department, be sure I can let them do that so they can share with the increase in value of the shares, because we're going to be a chip manufacturer in addition to a EMP shield manufacturer, which means that we can help the car industry and various other industries that depend on computer chips. I'm really quite happy about that. So anyway, I just wanted to share that information with you. If you're interested in looking at the shares, you can email me and I'll tell you what might happen. You know, what I might be allowed to release for sale to my friends.
Well, okay. Otherwise, this is a ground floor opportunity. Is that not? That's a correct statement.
Yeah. Well, we haven't been able to release our shares until we became unincorporated, and a few other things had to happen with our board of directors. And I don't mind sharing some of that with my supporters here to get them in on the current value. I think they say the shares are worth about $10 book value per each at the moment. So
will you be going, and pardon me for stretching this on, but will you be going public as a public corporation?
I don't think we plan to at this point, because we want to have control of the company. Whereas when it goes public, it gets out into where foreign operators can buy in, you know.
Gee, I wonder where we heard that before. Okay.
Now, this is an American thing, and with this kind of investment, you know, that we're doing and things, we're going to obviously be able to pay dividends, you know, after we get all this built and staffed and churning over all the goodies that people need. I know we've been dealing with this possibility for several months now, and yesterday we finally announced it to the public, which is, you know, I'm not letting anything out of the bag, but there are other things in motion at the moment as well. Let me just see what pictures there. That's the governor's at our factory, picture number two. And there's some of our office staff there. It's really, you know, it's amazing. What has it been, 5 years since we started this or something? And you know, from, you know, a garage operation where, you know, over where Tim lives in Kansas, he put together about 500 of these EMP shields, the first ones, you know, all made by hand. And now we're turning out thousands a month, and got $1 million assembly line for those. But then we're doing all this other stuff, you know, with chips and a couple of other projects that will be announced a little bit later in the year. I'm amazed to watch all this happen. It just, because Tim and I were trying to make the Mori antenna work, and we realized that it was lowering the impedance of the air around it, which attracts lightning. And when lightning strikes your power supply, you've got to have some way to shunt it off into the ground, which is why we looked at his design that he'd been playing with. And he said, you know, you can use this for EMP as well as for what we're wanting. It's the same, you know, kind of response. And so he went home and, you know, kind of put together a prototype. And it was a prototype. It had a square box, you know, and it had a long, stiff cable that took all the wires out from it to where you're going to hook it up. But that was a prototype. And then we're away. Just because of trying to solve a problem with the energy gathering collection of the Mori antenna, we came into this EMP shield, which has helped thousands of people and will help thousands more. Anyway, end of commercial. I just wanted to catch you up with what's happening.
You know, that's more than a commercial. That's a true success story. And I believe that your developments and the way you've developed the process of construction and distribution will be an American success story if allowed to be written in the history books in the future. I'm just saying. Okay. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I'll tell you, Tim was telling me there are other government-sponsored projects in Kansas, and Kansas seems to be the state du jour for, you know, development, new projects that are being funded by DOD and, you know, various three-letter agencies. So Kansas is, you know, in spite of it being very hot and muggy there during the summer and things like that, it is a very good place for up-and-coming businesses. And, of course, a couple of years back, three, 4 years back, I guess, we won the state thing for best small business, you know, development in the state. So, you know, for importing and exporting as well. So, anyway, now, speaking of money, let's go to slide 47, Eric. This is kind of cool. NASA to send SpaceX Falcon Heavy to observe one of the largest asteroids worth 70,000 times the global economy of Earth. Right. Why? Well, Kate, this asteroid has a lot of gold and platinum and all kinds of precious metals. It's just a metal asteroid. So they're going to send up and photograph and do a stats review of what's, you know, the best place to land a facility to start mining or to push that asteroid closer to us so we can mine as we need it. But, you know, the gold and the platinum and all, you know, iridium, all the precious metals we've got on the Earth didn't just kind of form when Earth did. They were added by asteroid impacts and meteorites, you know, meteors, which became meteorites, impacts all over the globe. And that's why they fall in certain patterns where large numbers of asteroids or meteors hit the planet during its formative period. So we've used up, I think, about all but half of the gold and silver and stuff that was deposited. So we need to start looking down the road at replacing it. So this asteroid, Psyche, it's called, is a very, you know, lucrative look. You know, of course, business are looking at funding it. How you put a place on it to mine it, and whether it's cheaper to move that asteroid out of orbit and over closer to us somewhere and park it in an orbit with the moon or outside the moon's orbit, or whether they're going to just mine the stuff there and send rockets back to the Earth. I'm still not sure how they're going to take, you know, tons of gold and metal and stuff like that and descend from orbit down to the surface without, you know, using a lot of fuel. But anyway, it'll be an interesting project. Maybe by that time they'll release the anti-gravity stuff and it won't be an issue. In fact, that's a very real possibility. The core of that asteroid, by the way, is made of metallic iron, nickel, and gold. And the estimated worth of today's market is $10 quintillion, according to Forbes magazine.
How is that known, the composition of the internal part of the asteroid?
You know, that's an interesting. You know, I don't know. They haven't even sent up something to, well, officially anyway, to plot the depth of it with seismometers and things like that. So maybe it's a way that the thing moves, that they can tell that there's this and there's that, and it's semi-round and maybe it has a core. But in the asteroid belt, there's a lot of fragments there, and they're odd shapes. So how did they know this? I don't know. It's an interesting question, actually. I should have thought of that myself. I haven't seen it here. They've got a detailed map of Psyche, which is in a related article. If you look there, down there underneath that video, Eric, you can click on it. Let's see here. Okay, it's a main asteroid belt with a unique potato-like form, they say. The side that the mass and density calculations do not support a fully metallic residual core. Instead, a complex combination of metals and silicates is more plausible. All right. So, yeah. Well, they have this map. Let me just see if I can get to the map and see how they made the map. Abstract. Where's the map? They have all these articles. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And if it's not part of your, I mean, you don't have to answer that question. And people can research that themselves, but, you know, anymore, taking information at face value to me is not what I do anymore.
Well, yeah, you know, it's, as I say, I apologize for not even thinking about that before, but that is an interesting question. Is how the heck do you map and know what's in an asteroid if you haven't been there yet? But
do we have the capabilities of doing so? I'm just curious. Inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've done it with one asteroid here in the past where they put a little satellite or something onto it and crashed it in there, I think, or something like that. No, they landed, yeah, and they took pictures right up to the landing before it crashed. That's what it was. And so maybe they took observations on that asteroid. But this asteroid, I don't think anybody sent any kind of a mission anywhere close to do local sensing of what the gravitational and magnetic fields are like. But anyway, it's an interesting story. It's the gold rush of the 23rd century, perhaps, if we're here that long. But okay.
Interesting.
Let's go from asteroids to slide 44. 44 is an interesting one. If you click on the picture, slide 44, Eric. That's a picture of the discovered moons of Jupiter. All those pathways are separate moons that they've discovered that are bigger than 1.5 kilometers, 1.5 miles in diameter. And that qualifies as a moon. There's 92 moons of Jupiter. Can you believe that?
I didn't even know there was one.
Well, obviously, you didn't watch 2001 or 2010 Space Odyssey, but
I
anyway.
I did not. But
Oh, dear. Oh, I wouldn't admit that on air.
I've admitted worse, but okay.
Let's see. Tell how many Saturn had there. But Uranus, they say, has now confirmed 27 moons for Uranus. Neptune has 14. And, of course, Mars has 2 and Earth has 1, except for there is a small moon-like object that does qualify as a moon still orbiting Earth. So technically speaking, we do have 2 moons. You just can't see the other one. Isn't that kind of neat? Let's see. Yeah, it'd have to be 1 mile or 1.5 kilometers in diameter to qualify as a moon. Let me see if the article tells me. I wanted to know how many that Saturn had.
Put some condos up there.
Yeah. Well, there's an investment. Jupiter, blah, blah, blah.
As a matter of fact, you can call 1-888-HAGMAN for your first chance at occupying one of the moons of Jupiter in the condo fashion. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Good Lord. Okay.
You'll get cards and letters. You will. Yeah, you will. Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Now, while we're on the subject of, moons and whatever, look at slide 43, Eric. This is something rather interesting. They have found that the Earth's core has stopped in 2009. Instead of going westward, it's going eastward. I think that's what they said. Yeah. And they say there's about a 7-decade or 70-year period for this happening. So what happens when the core of the planet stops dead, and I did read that there was a discussion about that years ago, and then goes the opposite direction? Now, that is kind of counterintuitive when you think about it, because if the surface of the Earth is already rotating eastward because the sun rises in the east, and if the core was up until 2009 rotating the other direction, you would think that it put a strain between the core and the crust of the Earth somehow. And now that it stopped and changed to go the other way, it's going to accelerate things, which will put a change in the other direction in the Earth's core, or Earth's surface. And maybe that's why we're seeing more earthquakes and volcanoes at this time. If you just, think about it, wow. In fact, if you click on it, you clicked on the picture, look at the picture, click on the picture and you'll see two looks at the core, and you'll see shells, different distinct densities of things between the core and the surface of the Earth, the crust. And I look at that and I say, well, they've done this by reading earthquake wave bounces, S&P waves and stuff like that, secondary and primary wave vibrations from earthquakes. And they tell the density of these various layers. But I think that we're going to have somewhere in there at least one area that's like a hollow shell, you know, like a shell between the layers, just because of the way gravity works. But I thought it was quite interesting to see that article.
Interesting indeed. Wow. I thought I felt something in 09, but I wasn't sure.
No, well, yeah.
Okay.
Did the earth move for you?
The earth moved under my feet. Absolutely.
Okay. How much time we got left now?
We have about 14 minutes.
Oh, good.
If I shut up, we'll have 14 minutes. So go ahead.
Well, that's true. That's true. The sun. The sun is interesting right now. Really interesting. This month I've been looking, you know, every day at the coronal mass ejections and flares and that kind of stuff. And I don't know whether I actually put this in there or not, but they are concerned about the changes in the sun. They think the sun is broken because of a vortex of plasma that orbited the North Pole of the sun for, probably a day or two, three, something like that before it disappeared. I'm just checking now to see where to send you here, Eric. Let's see, that shows that. Okay. Oh, that's good. Okay. Sorry, I'm talking to myself and having a great time.
And that's fine. You talking to yourself is valuable to the audience, I believe, because you can learn more, folks, from this man. Standale.com is his website. His musings to himself sometimes flow over to us, and we are benefited by that. So continue.
Yeah, well, Holly tells me that I shouldn't do that. It sounds like I'm losing my marbles here, but, you know, getting old or something. Not sure exactly. But anyhow, slide 40, click on the slide. The text link is not linked up for some reason, but click on slide 40. That shows the solar flare happening today as we're doing the show. And that's pretty mighty. When you see the animation of it, it's really impressive. They haven't got it yet because we're just now taking the stills off of the thing. But in slide 41, this was taken on the 17th of February forward. If you click on that, I think it will take us, to an animation from the 17th, 18th, and 19th. So 17th through the 18th. And if you look at that, they give you an idea of some of the things I've been watching that get my attention.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And radio listeners, please go over to our account on Rumble or Brighteon and watch what Stan is referring to. You can go to HagmanReport.com, two ends on Hagman, and you can see this. Stan, if that was earthbound, we would that be would, well,
in deep dew, boy.
Yeah. SPF 1000 wouldn't even do it. Okay.
Yeah, and the weird thing about it is that these things come, there's one of them that just glances. It was traveling at 2 million miles an hour. So it took, you know, for 98 million miles from the sun, it took 49 hours, nearly, 2 days and nights to get to us. But when it gets to you, it's strung out. And so if you look at the Carrington event, you know, about 1859 or so, that lasted for hours, and it raised the voltage on the power lines, the telegraph lines along railways so far that arcs jumped out and caught wheat fields and stuff like that on fire. As you were saying earlier in the show, if we have an EMP from the sun, it's not going to be a minor effort. It's going to be hours, and it's going to raise the voltage up to 20, 30,000 volts at least on your lines coming from the power company into your home or business or wherever. And they make fires. I mean, it burned the telegraph operator's hands, so they had to go to the hospital from the arcs that were on the telegraph keys. So that's another reason for an EMP shield to dump that high voltage from the sun down into the dirt, because you don't want it, you know, heating up your breaker box and burning your walls and your house down. Anyway, just a side note to that. Let's look at the sun. Slide 39. And this is an animation again, so you can see this dynamic action. from the 18th, I think it is, to the, or 17th to the 20th. Don't know if we got a 21st one or not. Yeah, just stopped at the 21st. So looking at this, you can see that the sun is very active. And the scientists were concerned that the sun was broken simply because, let me just see if I've got that here. I'll just check on that here. Just give me a second here. I'll read from that article here. Solar. Okay, sun broken. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Part of the sun is broken and has scientists baffled. That's on a website, Indy, I-N-D, for Indy Day-O, I'm sure. Indy100.com, science tech. It says part of the sun. And it gives you a nice animation there. I had to turn it off so I could talk. A section of the sun has left the surface and begun circulating around the top of the star, as it were a huge polar vortex, and it's not exactly clear why this has happened. The observation was made possible thanks to James Webb Telescope, and it's no surprise that it piqued the interest of scientists everywhere. And I did have an animation that I don't think I put it up on the website today. I had it up earlier, which showed it looked like kind of a solar flare that strung out between two points and orbited like spun at the top of the sun. And this is not clever. When this happens, it makes me think about biblical prophecy about the sun being surrounded by a cloud of dust, probably thrown up from its surface as it emits, ejects certain amount of stuff like it did around that star and the Monoceros cluster. It took a few months to go through its whole stellar formation for its satellites and things. And we're going to see that here. I'm sure biblical prophecy is telling us the truth about that. Now, look at slide 42 when you get finished with that.
All right.
Slide 42 is the magnetic field lines of the sun. This was taken yesterday because I couldn't get today's up yet. They hadn't published it yet. And the green streamers are the north pole of the sun, and the purple one's the south pole. And that yellow dot is what's facing the Earth. That's the Earth-facing view. You'll notice that the north and south pole are cattywampus. They're tilted. That's because every solar cycle, sunspot solar cycle, during that cycle around close to the middle of the cycle, the north and south poles reverse. But they don't do it at the same time. The south pole, this time the purple one's probably started flipping some time back, and the north pole hadn't even started to flip. And it will catch up, but it takes about a year or two between the two for both poles of the sun to reverse. At some point in time, you have two south poles or two north poles on the sun. And when they change over, they cause stress on the surface of the sun, which you can see where these black and white little spots on the sun are. These are sunspot active regions, and these are the things that throw out flares and coronal mass ejections. And then the other areas that put out solar wind are dark spots, which you don't see on this particular image. But I just find it interesting to watch this daily, how it screws up the magnetic fields. So the white lines show how the turbulence is being affected by this internal turbulence, where you're flipping a pair of poles to the north pole and a pair of poles to the south pole. You understand that means there's two poles in each hemisphere of the sun, and they flip to realign with each other so that one is dominant, south, and the upper one is dominant north, or, vice versa as time passes. And it clicked to slide 38, Eric. Now, slide 38, I stopped the animation yesterday so that we could see what we're looking at here. And these pair of graphs, they are, the top one shows how dense the solar wind is coming from the yellow object in the middle, which is the sun, and how the solar wind spirals out where it's got heavier concentrations and lower ones where the blue are. But the thing to look at is across from the sun at the top in the middle, you see a little green dot. That's Earth. And then there's two satellites, one ahead and one behind, a purple and a red one, which tell us, various things about the sun. And the second one, down below, the velocity, the radial, the spin velocity, shows the spin velocity of the plasma or coronal wind coming out in this case, and where it is to, relative to Earth. Now, yesterday was its peak plasma density. You can see by the green line in the top of the graph. And the bottom graph, the green line shows that its peak velocity here was 450 kilometers per second, which, I think that was 1,000,000 miles an hour. I'm not sure. Anyway, looking at this, this tells us when the ejection from the sun is going to hit us. By best estimates, they forecast this several days ahead of time. But you can go to this site, Space Weather Prediction Center, go up and you can see that, and click to the current space conditions. And you can do that daily and see what's coming our way as far as what we know. We'll get the light from a coronal mass ejection or a large coronal hole. We'll see this 8 minutes or so before, you know, it forms, and that our acid forms. And it takes about 8 minutes for the light of that to get to us. But when you have a coronal mass ejection or a flare, it takes light 8 minutes to get to us. But the flares and the coronal mass ejections don't travel that fast. If you're looking at 1,000,000 miles per hour and you compare that to, you know, the speed of light, when you're talking miles, you know, millions of miles per second, there's no contest. We'll see what is coming long before it gets here, like maybe 2 days before it gets here, and sometimes the faster ones, maybe a day and a half. So this is an interesting place to go to keep an eye on what's happening with our sun. And the other one, slide 37, is the thing we put up weekly about the coming active regions of the sun to watch for. And this is a heliograph, the green heliograph. In the upper left-hand corner, you see a white, very white area coming our way, and that was what was producing that huge eruption we saw for today on that image I showed you of the sun just a few moments ago. This gives us an idea. Right in the center of the graph is what's facing us at zero longitude, and on the left side is what's moving toward us, which will take a maximum of about 6 days for that left edge to meet to hit where we are. But looking at it now, I'd say within 3 or 4 days, this danger area at the top left will be approaching, and another day or so later, the one at the lower left on the left side will be approaching Earth. So it gives you a little bit of a warning about what to look for. Okay. Slide 48. I found this interesting. It was in Israel, and they were showing, you know, how to grow trees and plant trees there using the principles in the Torah, how to grow, how to lay fallow, et cetera, et cetera. And the temple service focuses on agriculture, you know, of all kind, because they grew, you know, trees, olives, dates, you know, all that kind of stuff. And looking at here, this is a commandment from Leviticus. When you enter the land and plant any tree for food, you shall regard its fruit as forbidden. 3 years it shall be forbidden for you and not to be eaten. In the fourth year, all its fruit will be set aside for jubilation before Hashem, or God. And only in the fifth year may you use its fruit, that its yield may you be increased. Well, I didn't kind of do that with our orchard trees. I have to admit, when we got peaches and apples, we kind of harvested. But, interesting to read this and see about, you know, agricultural habits. It's a beautiful picture there. I don't know whether that's cherries or what, but it's beautiful pink blossoms. And they are kind of leading the world in agriculture and that techniques, you know, and I'm grateful for their help in doing that.
Wow.
Okay.
Stan, thank you so very much. Hopefully I didn't take too much time from you. We are at the end of the show, and I appreciate that. I really do. I appreciate you. That's standeo.com and empshield.com. Stan, God bless you, my friend. Thank you.
May God bless you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Folks, we're going to enter into Overdrive, Hagman Overdrive Edition. So those people listening on Globalstar, switch over to our HagmanReport.com for the full Hagman experience. How do you like that? At no extra charge. There you go.